Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, who was the only member of Jonatas' family who openly spoke with him about the family being Jewish, and what did his other relatives tell him? Jonatas Chimen Dias da Silva Benayon is a Brazilian-American symbolist artist, author, and academic. He holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in Latin American, Caribbean, and Iberian Studies from the University of Madison, Wisconsin, and a Master of Fine Arts degree from Florida International University. He's published articles on the Iberian Inquisition and the Sephardic Diaspora, a theme that underlies his work. He's also lectured at many conferences and devotes a good deal of his time to philanthropic activities. Embracing one's cultural identity and disclosing personal beliefs is a recurring theme in Chimen's art, in which he uses a wide range of techniques. His exploration of identity is often drawn from his own family's history of forced conversions and survival in Spain and Portugal as crypto-Jews. Since 2001, Jonatas' work has been featured at numerous biennials, museums, art galleries, and auctions. In 2015, he was awarded the title of Artist of the Year by the Anti-Defamation League for his art series titled The Journey, which tells of Chimen's first-hand experience of coming into the light of freedom after his family endured centuries of secretly sustaining a crypto-Judaic heritage. Jonatas told us the fascinating story of this personal journey and how it has influenced his life and his work as an artist.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Jonatas. First, which of your many surnames do you use?
Oh, last names. Okay, that's complicated. As an artist, I go by Chimen, which is really from the Jimenez family.
That's like me.
As an artist, I go by that. If you want to reflect more on my crypto-Jewish background, then I would go by Dias da Silva, but that's one last name. That's not two last names. It's really just one. It's my paternal last name. And the Benayon is my returnee last name as a Jew. After return to Judaism, that became part of my Hebrew name. That deals with the name that I found in the archives of the Inquisition, which I readopted as an American.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about your own background, where you're from, and a little bit of your family history.
Okay, sure. So, I was born in Brasilia in 1981. That's the capital of Brazil, as most people know, the new capital of Brazil. And my family, my grandparents, went to Brasilia as new settlers for the new capital. They helped basically build the capital. And so this pioneering crowd that went to Brazil, they're known as candangos, because they went to a place where it was basically a desert and with a big dream. And they wanted to build a new capital. And by going there, people would realize their dreams of getting good jobs and really creating this modern city in the middle of nowhere.
That wasn't very long ago. I remember when they made Brasilia the capital.
Not long ago. It must be maybe 60 years old now. So my mother is one of the first generations that could possibly have been born there. So mm-hmm. My mother was born there. My father also went as a child, and I was born there. So I'm a second generation born in Brasilia. So when it comes to my family background, before arriving to Brasilia, they were from the southwest of Brazil, my mother's family, which is the state of Minas Gerais.
Uh-huh.
And my father's family is from the northeast of Brazil, which is the area of Recife, mm-hmm. all the way to Bahia. These are the oldest areas of Brazil. That's where Brazil started. So my father's family has been in Brazil for many, many centuries. They were really early settlers since the 1600s. And my mother's family, what I know of her background through genealogy is that her mother's family arrived around the 1800s. And both of my families, by coincidence, I guess, or not, they have a background of being Portuguese and Spanish. But before arriving to Brazil, my father's family and my mother's family, they passed by Amsterdam. And my mother's family also went through Hamburg. There was a colony of Portuguese people in Hamburg that lived in Amsterdam. They did a trade with Hamburg. And then there was a gold rush in Brazil, and a lot of these families went to Brazil. There was a German migration to Brazil, but in fact, many of those people were not really German. They were Portuguese people who lived in Germany. So my father's family, he has a Portuguese father and a Spanish mother. In my mother's family, there is this Portuguese side, which is also Spanish. And there's a Brazilian side. Her father's side is very Brazilian. There's more of the elements of the admixture of Brazil. And both of my father and my mother's family, they ended up going to Brazil, and that's where my parents met. And they carried with them the traditions of their parents and grandparents. Especially on my mother's side, there were a lot of many different traditions that she basically imposed on us. We had to do them. They were sort of a family law. Well, I'll give you some examples. On my father's side, the idea was more that you have to marry within the family. So on my mother's side, they practiced this family law, which I'll exemplify a few of these traditions. And you had to marry people who practiced similar traditions. On my father's side, you had to marry actually cousins. So on my mother's side, her grandmother had 22 children.
Wow.
And she was a very strong matriarch, yes. She married three times. All husbands died of natural deaths. But she was a woman who was really the matriarch of the family. This was a matriarchal family, really. And she used to be very vigilant over how the children behaved and where they ate, what they ate, and what they did. So, for instance, my mother's grandmother used to gather all the girls and teach them that they have to behave a certain way once they get married, once they become grown women, when they are ready to have children. For instance, whenever the women had their periods, their menstrual periods, they were told that they had to go to the river. Now, these are crypto-Jewish traditions that match with rabbinical traditions, but there will be some distortions, of course. These people had no contact with rabbinical Judaism for a good number of generations. So it's a miracle that it's even similar. So she would say, after your period, you have to go to the river. Now, she wouldn't say after the seventh day of the last day of your period, like rabbinical tradition teaches, but she would say, you go to the river. And for those who have moved to cities, what you need to do is you have to take a rain shower, the first rain shower after your period is over. Then you can have sexual relations with your husband. So she would adapt things almost like as somebody with a rabbinical authority for the family. She taught everybody that, and this was also on my father's side, you could not mix meat and dairy. They thought they would die, actually. There was a lot of these ideas that if you eat certain things, you will die. It's collapses. It was instilled in everybody, both my father and my mother's family, they had to marry clean people. And I believe that this word clean meant people who eat like us, people who wash themselves like us, people who keep these traditions.
Did they consider themselves Jewish? Did they know that they were Jewish, or were these just like family traditions?
That is an incredible question. In my experience throughout crypto-Jewish studies, and specifically pertaining to my family, they would never mention the word Jewish. The most they would mention was that they were actually from Holland. Hmm. There was a sense of separation. There was a sense of... Now, here's the interesting thing. They would call other people Gentiles. They would never call themselves Jews. They would never utter the words Jews, Jewish Jews or Hebrews but they would call other people Gentiles. And in a way, there was a sense of superiority that because those people did not eat cleanly or because they did not wash themselves a certain way, they were dirtier. They were you're not supposed to eat at their places. You're not supposed to marry with them because they were not as clean as you were. Therefore, you should not marry them because they do not match. Things are going to go wrong. If they marry outside, they would be ostracized from the rest of the family. And the children of the offspring of these couples, they would not be considered part of the family anymore. So they were told to, first of all, marry people who are from the family or marry people who practiced very similar traditions. And then there were a few families who were like that. On my father's side, they had another three families who were the same way, the Matos family, the Pereira family, for instance, because my family, my father's family is Dias da Silva, and he only married with the Pereira with the Matos family. On my mother's family, they married with the Oliveiras, with the Fernandez family, with the Matos family as well.
So, in other words, you were not actually part of a Jewish community when you were growing up in Brazil. So how did you come to real Judaism? How did you find this?
So when I migrated, my family decided to leave Brazil in the late 90s. And we were here now as Brazilian family, as Brazilian people in South Florida. And what happens is, well, there's a large Brazilian community here in South Florida, and we met many Brazilian people, and our first reaction was, well, let's join them, let's invite them over, let's create friendships within the Brazilian community, because, you know, we're immigrants. What happened first was the shock, this cultural shock, that even though people are Brazilian, we're not the same at all. So then I realized especially that in Brazil, we lived in such an isolated way of self-marginalization. We had such a fence around ourselves that the people who were within the fence, on the inside part of the fence, they were just like us. So we felt like we were like everybody else, but in fact, we had very peculiar traditions and a way of life. So in the U.S., we didn't find that among the Brazilian people. And we started looking around, like, who can we be friends with? And little by little, we understood that there was a group of people who were a lot like us. Eventually, I would get my first job. Eventually, my father and mother would make friendships. And we ended up having a lot more in common with American Jews, who are mostly Ashkenazim, than with Brazilian people in the U.S. What we had in common was the family structure, was the sense of cleanliness, of purity in the house, the sense of blending in but not really being assimilated, because that's really how we grew up in Brazil. Now, at that point, it was just a curiosity, and we started making some connections within the Jewish community, not at the religious level, but more at a social level. Then I started asking a lot more questions. I said, how did the family arrive in Brazil? Why have we been immigrants for so long? And because my father has a family, a branch in his family that are in Brazil in the 1900s from Spain, from Seville, from Almeria, Seville, that part of southern Spain. And there was always this immigrant identity in my family. So, and then we come to the U.S., so I keep seeing this repetition of immigrations. And I said, why did we move around? And then my father said, well, there were problems, political problems, religious problems in Spain. People were persecuted for their opinions. I said, okay, and how about your father, who has been, I mean, your father's family has been in Brazil for a long time. How come they never had any identity as a Catholic? I mean, in fact, some of them used to say that they didn't practice anything. Yet they were spiritual people. They talk about God, but they never would go to the church. And my father's family, all of them were Freemasons. And to be a Freemason, which is not a religion, by the way, I hope the listeners know.
No, of course.
It's a fraternity. And to be able to join this fraternity, you have to believe in a God. You have to believe in a creator. So my father's family, all the males were Freemasons, so they could not have been atheists. So my father used to say, well, my grandfather was quite spiritual. And he used to talk about God, but he would never go to the church. God is the creator. So I say, okay, let's talk to them more. So we started calling back the family in Brazil. And I wanted to talk to the oldest people alive in the family. And little by little, we got some information that why they arrived in Brazil and when. And that's when I discovered that my family arrived very early on in Brazil, my father's family. And that they were universalists. They had a sense of being separated. They believed in one God. And they practiced a few things because of this family tradition. Eventually, as I was looking for keywords already using the internet, I came across the history of New Christians. And a lot of these people who were early New Christians or B'nai Anusim or crypto Jews who arrived in Brazil, a lot of them were practicing a hidden form of Judaism, which matched exactly with the traditions, the strange traditions that my family kept. So there are many books in Brazil that eventually I came to discover that would speak about these inquisitional trials, talking about how they made sausages to mimic the taste of pork, but they used bread and chicken and a lot of spices. And this is exactly the sausage that my mother's father made. They would talk about the practice of lighting candles inside these closets on Friday nights, but also Mondays. That's exactly what my father's family did. They would talk about the practice of marrying cousins. They would talk about the last names. And because my father's family had been there for so long in Brazil, I was able to discover some historical documents because they found that they settled a whole area, which talked about their origins being of New Christians.
So you were interested and you discovered all these things. Did the people in your family who you were speaking to know that your family came from conversos, from forced converts, or was this something that they just discovered when you told them about it, and what kind of reaction did they have?
Well, it was very interesting. So, I had a mix of different kinds of reactions. Some of them, if I was pointing towards asking anything about the Jewish past, they would just shut down. They would not talk anymore. So I learned that very early on because I spoke to some older uncles, and they just didn't want to talk anymore about it. So I said, you know, I'm not going to mention the word Jews. I'm just going to say, you know, did they practice anything different? What was their spiritual beliefs? Family traditions. So I wanted to just focus on traditions, so that way I would be able to uncover things. But to my surprise, my great-grandmother, who was alive at the time, my mother's mother's mother, she spoke clearly about the Jewish background of the family. She said, no, my parents taught me a lot of things. And yes, we had this identity that was not Catholic, and in fact it was from this group that went to from the Netherlands to Hamburg, and they were Portuguese people, and they were Jewish. And I said, but were your family Jewish? And he said, well, they were part of this community. They were part of this community. So little by little, I understood that the oldest people, for them it was very foggy, this issue of identity. What they knew is that their religion was the family law. They didn't attach themselves to a community anymore. They didn't attach themselves to a set of actually an identity. They had a fluid identity that would just not let go of the family law. And the family law is what was this form of crypto Judaism. Mm-hmm. Really, that's the religion they kept. And but no, they would not talk about being Jewish clearly, except for my mother's mother's mother. And what they would talk about is that there were people who were different, and they would talk about being part of a diaspora nation. And then I found out that Portuguese Jews used to call themselves gente da nação, people of the nation. And I heard people in the family saying that. And they would have this identity that was more about being separated, as you can never mix. You can never marry people who are outside of the family or outside of these people who don't practice, who practice these traditions.
So what did you do with this personally? Did you personally contact normative Jewish communities, or is this just part of your own personal identity? How, I mean, in what way do you feel Jewish?
Well, once I had no doubt that we came from of a Jewish background, then I started digging more documents, and I wanted to really be sure. I knew that I was at least partially Jewish by then, and then I discovered that to be Jewish, you have to be Jewish from your mother's side. And I had my great-grandmother alive, almost 105 years old.
Wow.
She would die very old, yes. And she spoke about these traditions that were clearly taught by her mother in of a rabbinical nature, not biblical nature. So they had to be part of a Jewish community at some point. So I said, okay, so we have no doubt of this, but we don't have any proof. We don't have marriage certificates. We don't have anything that says we are Jewish. So I kept on doing research. I did research for 12 years to the point that I was able to find eventually the way back through the Inquisition archives that would speak very clearly of our Jewishness, without a doubt. With that, I said, I was born not knowing of this heritage because the church chose to take it away from us. So I was so angry. I was so angry that I said, I'm going to bring it all back as much as I can. In my generation, we're going to bring back this identity. So at that point, I spoke to my parents, and my parents gave me their blessing. They said, do whatever you want to do with this. We bless you. If you want to learn everything, if you want to join a Jewish community, we bless you. We allow you to do this. Please go ahead. So at that point, I started taking Hebrew classes to learn some Hebrew. I started learning the Aleph Bet at a Reform synagogue. Eventually, I realized that my family's tradition they were so, in a way, it permeated so much of our lives that I was not okay with just practicing a more modern, form of Judaism. I really wanted to be a fully practicing Jew. So I asked my dad, how do I know who is like a Jew who lives Judaism? And then my dad drew the picture of what really looks like a Hasidic Jew. And I said, wow, this looks like a cowboy. Because they were wearing black and white. And I obviously had no idea what was the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim and all that. I would eventually learn all that. But what I did was, as soon as I saw one who looked like that, I said, listen, you're Jewish, right? And he said, yeah, I'm Jewish. I said, where do they go to, where's your synagogue? I said, why do you ask? He said, well, because I come from a Jewish background. I know nothing about it. I recently discovered, and I would like to start attending. He said, oh, this is great. I didn't find a resistance that many people talk about, which eventually I would find. But from that man, he said, here's where I go. And I started going there. And I kept on going there for 4 years. This was a Chabad. And I didn't know the details of Jewish law. I used to drive and go there with a loud Mustang, you know, as a young man, long hair. But learning. A kind of Judaism that wasn't really part of my family, but it was Judaism. So eventually I learned by reading more and more and more that I would have issues if I wanted to marry a Jewish woman one day, that they would ask me to show proof of my Jewishness, of my Judaism. So I said, wow, is it enough to just point them out to my great-grandma? Is it enough to just speak about my history? And I found out that that would not be enough. I had to have a clear declaration from a rabbinical court that I'm a Jew. And so that quest would go on for over 10 years of going to rabbis and presenting to them everything I could possibly present, which was some documents. I wrote down all of these traditions that I could find out and recordings of testimonials. And they said, listen, all of this does show that you are Jewish, but still, in order to help you, we have to give you a conversion. And even if you help you out, it still has to be a conversion. And once I heard that word conversion, perhaps because of, I don't know, genetic memory, if that's even such a thing, that scared me. The whole idea of having to convert after my family was forcibly converted to Catholicism was just insane to me. It was offensive in a way. I said, my family died, and I found the archives of the Inquisition. They died because they were Jews, and we kept on marrying each other. We even had genetic issues because we married each other. So how can we now have to convert in order to be considered a Jew again. So I didn't want that. And I discovered that the Portuguese Jews who had resettled in Amsterdam, they went through a whole process of getting together and getting help from local rabbis. They recircumcised, but they taught themselves Judaism, and they created their own synagogues, which became very strong. And they never went back to Judaism through a conversion. They simply went back to Judaism. They were basically Baal Teshuvot people. They were people who had to relearn everything. They had to immerse in a mikveh. They had to, if they were circumcised, they had to have a hakafat and brit. You draw a drop of blood. So it's like a conversion, but it's the understanding that they're not converts. They're just people restoring, bringing themselves back to the religion of their forefathers and foremothers. So I wanted that. These people have been Catholics for over 150 years. So I said, I come from those people, I want that. Obviously, I wouldn't find that because this is not Holland and this is not the 1700s anymore. So for 10 years, I would go to rabbinical courts and present my case and say, I can't convert. And I realized that you can't convert again if you're a Jew. That's a Hilul Hashem in a way, because you are uttering a prayer, a blessing in vain. You can't do that if you are undoubtedly Jewish. So there is such a thing as a giur lechumra to remove doubt, a conversion to remove doubt. But it still considers you a convert, and you lose your heritage as a Jew. So with time, I traveled a lot, and I was able to meet rabbis who were willing to listen to me, and thankfully I found a rabbinical court, Sephardic, Turkish rabbis who understood where I came from because we have a similar history. They understood my last names as authentically Jewish from a Spanish and Portuguese perspective. And they understood my traditions. And they saw my good intention to become a practicing member of the Jewish community. And so I received a return certificate, which is exactly what I was looking for. Follows the same process as a conversion, but it acknowledges your heritage. And that's all I wanted, to acknowledge my heritage, the people who suffer for being Jewish. And so I am a practicing Jew. I'm married to a Jewish woman who's part Ashkenazi, part Sephardic from Tunisia. And we live a very Jewish lifestyle every single week. With Judaism is at the center of our lives. That's me today.
I would like to speak about your work as an artist. Your webpage kind of reflects everything that you were just saying. I mean, one of the things on your webpage I'm going to quote, and I would like you to comment, his work explores personal and collective identity amidst a complicated and ever-changing cultural landscape. The artist's exploration of identity is often drawn from his own family history of migration, adaptation, and hybridization. Obviously, your identity and your search for your own identity has been very important to you, and I would like to know how this is reflected in your work.
Well, one of some of my most thought-provoking works of art have been paintings, some of them that deal exactly with this issue of having a hidden identity and uncovering this identity. And since I was very young, going through this process of fighting to be recognized as a Jew, I was already creating art professionally. And so I was producing with the intention of exploring my identity. And the idea of having to explain myself to rabbinical courts, even to fellow Jews sometimes, they want a clean, linear narrative about my background, and that is the impossibility of somebody who comes from a crypto-Jew, New Christian, Bnei Anusim background. We don't have a linear narrative. So what we have is a blend of signs that point towards the Jewish past. So my art became this convoluted, complex mix of materials, using, for instance, even inquisitional archives as backgrounds to create texture in my paintings, using immigration documents where the same person had several different names trying to disguise a past. So I embraced my genealogy. I embraced the materials that I discovered as I was unfolding my own identity to become a medium for my art. So I make art with my my discoveries, even DNA tests that I had to take to show my Sephardic lineage. I use that in my art, and I create paintings, I create installations that are large as big rooms for museums. I write a lot about it, research, and I do a lot of publishing that deals with this hybrid identity and this identity of being in a diaspora within a diaspora. So that's how I practice my art nowadays.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. Well, this was really fascinating. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.